The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.
Morning, Tuscot, Trinidad and Tobago. Thank you for joining us again for Agribusiness Innovation on Freedom 106.5 FM. Today, joining us, Mr. Ansel Bagwandeen, who has some interesting projects that he works on, combining technology with agriculture to produce some solutions. Ansel, thank you for joining us. Ansel, I think your mic might be muted. All right, as we give Ansel just a couple minutes to just solve a couple technical issues on his end. So Ansel Bagwandeen is an entrepreneur and an inventor. Ansel actually has a project that he does solar hydroponic towers. Now, these towers are actually powered by solar panels, so they are completely off the grid. I know that he has many uses and applications for these systems. And so today, Ansel is going to be telling us all about it. Ansel, you here with us?
Yes, I am. Good morning, all.
All right. So Ansel, what's the name of the company?
Okay. It's a startup company called ProtoFab TT, which is an agile technology fabrication company in Trinidad and Tobago.
Now, one of the most noteworthy projects that you work on is something called solarponics, right?
That's right. It's been, well, you can say on the market just about 3 years in terms of small-scale development and commercialization.
All right. So tell us a little bit about what solarponics is.
Well, the concept dated back to about 2014, almost 10 years now. In the early days of what we had, when we joined something called the Paris Accord for Climate Change in Trinidad and Tobago. And what took place later on in 2019, the U.S. federal government invited regional persons to see what happened to Puerto Rico after their double hit in 2017 with hurricanes in terms of their infrastructure and agriculture and so on. So what took place was the concept of solarponics was born in terms of having a portable tower garden that was independent of power and independent of plumbing that can be moved into shelter if required in order to look at food security in the Caribbean and small island developing states.
No, so it's towers pretty much that incorporate solar energy. What is the maximum size that you could run something like this?
Well, we are targeting what we call personal food security or small-scale farming. So the number of towers you have is up to you. In fact, Naprima College has a couple dozen. The actual individual tower occupies just about a square yard or a square meter of floor space. And it can stand either about 3.5 feet or 5 feet high, two different sizes, giving you either about 50 or 80 crops in that square yard of space.
No, what sort of crops are we talking about?
Well, you can have a variety of what the popular leafy greens. For more heavy fruiting crops like tomatoes and so on, you can support with a trellis, a wire trellis nearby. The popularity of the system is to produce the leafy greens like the lettuces and the seasonings and so on, the parsley and celery and so forth. And the convenience of it is, of course, the integration of the solar with the automation and the controller. So you're not really called upon to be a farmer so much as it is. It's suitable for the average person. Even persons with disabilities are using it right now.
Well, you know what? I know a lot of times with these solar towers, because I have one, a regular hydroponic tower, that I have to run an extension cord all the way out into the backyard. Or I have to run some sort of electrical appliance to get power out there. So your solution makes this pretty much independent. How long does a system like this last? Because I want to know how durable it is.
Well, because it's, let's call it independent of electricity and independent of a fixed water supply, It's convenient to place wherever you need to place it. So even if you need to place it in partial shelter, that's possible if and when required for storms and so on. In terms of reliability, because it's manufactured inside Trinidad and Tobago, the MIC Institute of Technology here, headquartered in Mocoa, but the actual assembly areas are the Center for Renewable Energy, where the oil refinery was in Point of Pierre. What we have is a situation where 100% of all the towers that have been deployed over the last 2-3 years are still in full operation because we support them with on-site technical support. So should something happen within one day, what we call next day service, because you're growing crops, of course, it's sorted out. And because we are manufacturing the technology here, what you receive is not a repair. What you receive is a replacement.
What about when I think of a solar system, I'm thinking of solar panels, batteries, but what about if the rain falls? Would it affect the system in any way?
Well, the system is unlike what the average business is accustomed to with a pump and a timer to date. Assesses the ambient weather conditions, and it has an internal, what we call a battery backup, something like a UPS, that for your computer. So when the solar power comes in through the panel, even if it's nighttime or it's bad weather for a couple of days, there's a battery backup that's fully charged inside the system that's recharged by the solar panel every time the sun comes back out. So that operates independently of external power. Now, should you have to store the unit indoors or you want to do projects indoors using LED lights, you can plug in the unit as well through a 12-volt adapter for full indoor use and training purposes like in classroom and so forth.
So how long then can a unit possibly last without being recharged by solar energy?
If you're in full shade, for whatever reason, typically a unit will run for 4 days before it needs any charging.
Okay, so I guess that when you say bad weather, so you have a storm passing through 2 to 3 days and you have to bring it in. You really then have no issues. It's just gonna keep running.
Yeah, it'll keep running. The plants will be irrigated and you will be able to just put it back outside when you're ready.
Answer, what's your background?
Well, I did industrial engineering way back when in the last century at the UWI. And then since then, I did some postgrad work with MIT and IBM and Cisco to do communications.
So then what got you interested then in trying to find solutions for the agriculture sector?
Well, within that particular UWI program, they encourage the engineers to develop solutions. But in terms of the agricultural sector, what took place was I always had an interest in what you would call fresh crops or fresh seasonings, especially in my particular area. I used to actually, in another lifetime, do what we call healthy cheesecakes and so on, based on yogurt as opposed to cream cheese. So I had an interest in food and health. So when that, you know, came into play versus my engineering background and my interest in, let's call it, inventing and developing, it all came together under, you know, the auspices of sustainability and the circular economy and healthy living for individuals so that the individual can have an alternative without making them a farmer. So this is how it all came into being. And now here we are with some traction and it's being used in education and so forth in the country.
Okay, that's actually quite interesting. So the first time you decided to come up with this solution, I was curious to know how long did it take from development to actually having a successful prototype?
Well, it had a couple interim delays because I do multiple projects. So there are about 3 or 4 projects running at any time. So when one gets traction, one gets sidelined for a little while. So the original concept was way back in 2014 when the first prototype or proof of concept was done for Kariri as a demo. Then it was, let's call it, parked up for a while I was doing battery regeneration technology, which is inside of the tower as well. And then, of course, in 2019, it came back into the fore with the events with the hurricanes in the Caribbean. And during the pandemic period, 2020-2021, I had the opportunity to refocus on finalizing what we call the minimum viable product. So I got support from the UNDP locally in terms of a little competition they had for green innovation, and that gave some finance in order to finalize a working platform, which was then supported by the MIC Institute of Technology. I formed a partnership with them, and they were prepared to look at innovating because they have an engineering cohort, young engineers in training. So there was an opportunity to do a project where we tested the technology and validated the function, so to speak, and did some short-run crops. And that's when it actually became commercial. What took place was, for the first commercial viability, the Atlantic LNG entity in late 2022 had a new policy of supporting solar energy in hydroponics in schools in their catchment area in Point Fortin for 5 schools down there. And they couldn't find a solution in the country that did that as an integrated approach. It was, you had to purchase hydroponics separately and then hire someone to do solar and hire someone to do the battery work and then hire someone to do the infrastructure and the wiring. And it became quite expensive and difficult to manage. So when they encountered us, just by accident, through networking, the opportunity was to scale what we had. No, it wasn't really what you call commercial ready, but they were prepared to work with us while we refined it. So that's how we came into the being of being in the schools and being supported by the energy sector at the same time via the MIC Institute of Technology Manufacturing.
Now, as somebody experienced in the field, could an alternate solution, something like wind power, be applicable here? Like, is there potential for it, or would you say that solar is superior?
For the portability aspect, which is important, especially in terms of the modularity in moving it indoors. Wind, being a mechanical, you know, you have a rotating device on a motor and then a post of some sort of fixture to hold the unit down. There are some disadvantages for that. The portability is lost and the infrastructure is required. So in that regard, I would suggest solar is probably the best way forward.
Yeah, I understand. So you have these systems. Am I allowed to ask what is the cost of a system like this?
Yes, sure. At this time, the MIC Institute in Macquarie is the retail, or let's call it distributing organization. A 50 planter unit complete with the solar and everything, well, set up at your site, let's put it that way, set up and working at your site, is 4,500 plus VAT TT dollars, which gives you a 1 year plus warranty of on-site support. If you're budgeting to start one up as an individual, remember to include about 500 TT dollars for, let's call it, consumables. You want some fertilizer, you want some something called a medium like Promix, and of course you want your seedlings of choice.
Ansel, what about if somebody has a hydroponic system that they have built, something that's a little bit larger but might have the same type of power consumption, but they want you to be able to apply your power to their system? How possible is something like that?
We have looked at it, but the challenge is this. If you already have a standard system, it's using what we call AC power pumps and so forth. One of the unique features of what we're doing is we're using low voltage, that's 12 volts, right, DC systems, which makes it child safe and pet safe for children to use. The plug-in systems are 120 volts, and of course, you have to have proper standards and so on for installation. And also, a 120 volt system also requires something called an inverter that takes the battery power from 12 volts or so to make it the 120 volts or the 240 volts. Wow. So there are a bunch of engineering considerations. Now, while it can be done, the best way forward is to simply replace your pump. So we get rid of all the high voltage inverters and the cost associated, and then our unit can integrate directly into your system once the pump is of sufficient size.
Oh, so I guess the answer to that is it's possible enough.
It's possible with a little bit of engineering. We can retrofit existing hydroponic systems, you know, the pipe-based horizontal ones and so on.
Right.
With the technology. So that's a part of the scalability of, in terms of designing what we're doing. Because as we're actually deploying what we call half-barrel or tub-based systems now into schools to address growing root crops and staple crops like corn and so forth.
All right. So, Ansel, you also have a project, and I'm going to stray a little bit, that you were working on to help with the African snails.
Mm-hmm. That took place as part of this one by force, actually. What happened was in, I think, late 2023, Point Lisas Nitrogen Limited, that's one of the energy sector companies that supported some of the schools in the central area with the towers. When we did the deployment, what happened within a relatively short space of time, well, the African snails are prevalent in central. They started to climb the towers and consume the crops even before, you know, the seedlings got going. And so we had a challenge with this new solution, but with the problem of the snails. Now, of course, one of the issues is this is in a school, even a primary school. So you don't want to throw pesticide on the ground and have dead snails, and then that attracts rodents and so on. And of course, children potentially can be, you know, walking about in this thing. So we had to come up with a solution that was more robust as well as child safe. And with the assistance of, well, the Point Lisas Nitrogen Investment, we were able to develop in a very short space of time a technology solution. Basically, a form of smart electric fence that is via adhesive tape. What we had to do was study the giant African snail's behavior and its anatomy in terms of what it was responsive to, because we didn't want to kill the snails. We wanted to deter them. We don't want dead snails at the bottom of your food crops, because of course they decay and attract flies and so on. So the solution deters the snails. It doesn't kill anything. So it's fully biodiverse. And now we've been deployed it for over 2 years, and now we're spinning it off as a standalone product, hopefully by November this year.
Because, you know, these snails are a real problem. I think not just in farms, but in homes as well.
Indeed.
Is there any risk of anybody, like, touching the system based on how it sounds and getting shocked?
No, it's the same equivalent voltage as what's in your mobile phone battery.
Right.
Or your, you know, if you buy a dry cell battery in the grocery. So this is why we designed it around that. So what we had to do was build in some technology in terms of how it worked, in terms of irritating the snail, but not harming it. So we solved that, and we were able to test it. And now we've done live testing in hundreds of locations now, and we're good.
How did you figure out that this would work? How did you figure out that this would deter them?
Well, in Trinidad and Tobago, there was a program. It's just finished, a three-year program. It's just finished this year. The World Intellectual Property Office, in conjunction with the Intellectual Property Office in Trinidad and Tobago, had a program called Appropriate Technologies Competition. So what they did is they came down here and they encouraged applicants to study technologies via their patent databases to solve problems on the islands. And once we were trained to do that, then you can isolate technologies that may be patented already elsewhere. But if we can introduce an improvement to that technology or adjustment to suit our environment, then we are free to use that base technology in our commercial products here at Liberty without any fees or leases. So the giant African snail technology, which we just call the snail jail for want of a better term, it rolls off the lips well. Was one such that won an award from the World Intellectual Property Office. We got a certificate for it and all of that. So that's how we are able to actually commercialize without doing as much R&D that was historically necessary. So on the patent databases, you can actually find, let's call it electric fences, suitable for snails, earthworms, and snakes and so forth. So we had to adapt it for our uses here in Trinidad, make it child safe, and make it commercially viable with the upgrades.
I mean, is this something that you could put around a house, or is it an application that could only be around like a small system?
We are going to be deploying kits. So the average homeowner, let's say on a 5,000 square foot lot, can purchase a kit, and there will be extensions to the kit if you have a larger property, which will protect your perimeter. And there's a what do you call a flat aluminum strip that you can drive over to protect your driveway as well.
So getting back into these solar panels, I was kind of curious. Does the solar system actually save people on the energy bill, or would you say that it's more like a security feature in terms of if there's an emergency?
Well, the purpose of it is twofold mainly. One, you want it fully portable, so you're not tied to the grid anywhere. So it's rural or urban, if you will, or up on your rooftop, if you will, wherever you want to put it. That's one of the key elements of the solar. But in terms of energy costs, there isn't any. So compared to whatever your installation is for any type of pumps, you wouldn't encounter any energy costs. We're actually looking at adding a feature to allow you to charge your phone off of the tower gardens in the next version. So it can actually be a benefit to you. Because, you know, this is one of the things. Out in the field, if you're a farmer and you're literally out in the field, having a solar charger on site is useful. So it's a feature we're looking at adding in.
Yeah, because, you know, your phone dies and sometimes you're working in the field and you're playing some music and then your phone dies and then you're there by yourself, you know. Or in an emergency, you can't contact anybody. You have to maybe leave it in the car to charge, which is far distance away. So I think that's actually quite a unique feature that you would seek to incorporate there.
Yeah, it's a little bit of a home safety backup. You know, even if you lose electricity because of a storm, that represents something that can, you know, support you.
So tell me about some of the places that you've been able to put in some of these towers.
We have, over the last couple of years, we've received a lot of support from the energy sector. That's companies like, as I mentioned, Atlantic Energy, Point Lisa's Nitrogen, Massey Gas, to name a few. In the corporate sector, we have had support from Republic Bank, JMMB, Digicel, and the Sir Optimus organization. Of course, the UNDP has been there from the onset. So what has happened, the business model has been where we are placing these towers in the schools based on all types of assorted sponsorships. Now, the government of Trinidad and Tobago via the Education Ministry has also done probably about half. So we're in 50 of our schools across the nation right now, probably you're talking around 200 towers, garden towers, with training programs and supplies, and we're keeping them operating right now. So we're impacting probably about 10,000 young people per school year right now.
That's quite a lot. Do you offer the actual training on how to do the hydroponic growing itself?
Yes, that's included. We have a 9-hour short course, mostly virtual, but with some hands-on for a starter person. Because remember, we're targeting primary schools as well as lower forms in secondary schools. So we have to address persons who are very new to this. So understanding of basic things like, you know, what a plant is, its roots, why seedlings need different feeding as opposed to mature plants, and what is the harvest cycle, and what's the suitable plants, and of course, even a certain amount of health benefits in terms of which plants to grow for what type of nutrients you want for yourself, whether it's vitamins or minerals and so on. So those elements are incorporated into about a 9-hour package, delivered over 3 days, maybe three-hour sessions. And so we build up skill sets for the teachers as well as the senior students in the schools.
So until you've been working on all the systems, have you had any difficulties with them, whether it be difficulties in figuring out technology, difficulties in getting partners?
From a functional challenge, we went through, let's call it the teething problems with early versions. The versions that we had first deployed in 0.14 Atlantic LNG were different. And we found some areas that could be improved, so it was refined. So we're in version 3 right now, which is the one that is pretty much prevalent all about. We've retrofitted all the schools with the latest version. So we didn't leave them with any old technology because it's necessary, of course, if we're doing training in schools and education in schools, everyone must have the same platform and the same guidance. In terms of our, let's say, call it support within the country, at the governance level, yes, we've had support. And Now we're just looking at scaling up. The MIC Institute of Technology has made a human effort in terms of supporting innovation via their trainees, as well as their engineers, to take the risk to manufacture and put out the infrastructure and so on. So now we're hoping that as we scale into all the schools, based on our conversations with the Ministry of Education and the Ministry of Tertiary and Skills Training, it represents going forward avenue, and we're just looking at managing costs. Now, when we're talking costs in Trinidad and Tobago, one of the benefits of the Tower Gardens, which should garner us more support, is the export potential. So that's something new we'll be looking at shortly for support.
Ansel, you know, you got involved in agriculture without being a farmer. One of the things is that we always talk to students and tell them that your education in other fields, whether it be IT, chemistry, biology, could actually bring you into the agriculture sector, and you don't have to actually be a farmer. Growing up, did you ever think that you would be in this field?
I always wanted to be an engineer based upon it. At the time when I was growing up, that was the only technical goal I could see locally. But the farming element is related to, let's call it, the creative industry, where you're growing something, you are still creating something. And we have to respect all the farmers for the work they've been doing over the years. But one of the challenges we face in the country is that the demographic of the farmers tends to be the more elderly people, people who've been involved in it for quite some time. And the young people have so many other opportunities for employment and gainful employment now that the term agriculture seems to connotate laborious work in the hot sun and challenges with floods and whatnot, without too much return on the dollar. However, what we're trying to do here, because what I have done, I mean, I grow my own crops as well at home with the Tower Gardens, is make it personal to each person. We are democratizing food security for everyone with technology and convenience. So it's a bit of a paradigm shift where if you're an accountant, if you're an engineer, if you're a lawyer, what have you, why not grow your food at home? Because it's automated. There's an artificial intelligence backend for your convenience. And it represents a healthy solution with as fresh as crops can be without pesticides, because that's a factor. Farmers out in the field have to use those pesticides. They have no choice. They're doing mega farming. But at your home, you can manage a healthier solution that's more cost effective. So these are the opportunities we're seeing. And with the educational aspect of it for the young people, we seem to have a win, because we're building human resource skill set in our renewable resource, being our young people. We're based on renewable energy. We're based upon recycling and upcycling plastics and batteries here in Trinidad. We're manufacturing in Trinidad, and we're looking to export the product to the other islands shortly.
So, Ansel, do you have any other technologies like this that are in the works that you can tell us, or are you going to have to keep those under wraps?
The ones that are very visible, of course, the snail defense system will be coming out shortly, but the one that is in the works that we can talk about, 2-3 years ago, with the assistance of the MIC Institute, we applied for a competition, a global competition by something called the Climate Launchpad Organization, where we competed among 2,000 other entrants globally from all the countries. And we were able to place in the top 5 globally for the battery upcycling technology. Now, this applies not only to small batteries like your lithium battery in your phone, but also to vehicle batteries like your lead acid battery in your car, as well as your hybrid electric vehicle battery. 2 years ago, not quite 2 years, maybe a year and a half ago, the Unit Trust Corporation made an investment towards that end via a competition they had as well. So these are coming out at a commercial level shortly to the landscape within Trinidad and Tobago to benefit the country in terms of taking a waste product, especially an e-waste product, and making new value that, you know, can make new employment and generate revenue.
When I say upcycle, what does it do with it?
Okay, let's take, for instance, a simple approach. We have tens of thousands of laptops in schools sponsored by the Ministry of Education. After every 2-3 years, what happens to all those laptops? They need new battery packs. So what happens to those battery packs? Usually they get tossed into the trash. Now, inside of each of those battery packs, there are up to 8 or 9 individual cells. They look like long penlight cells, the lithium battery cells. Typically, you find only 1 or 2 of those 8 or 9 or 10 being defective. So you're getting a yield of 70%, simply by opening the pack, taking it out, testing the cell, and then rebuilding a new battery pack. So what you're seeing there is a waste that is virtually free, that actually contaminates our landfills, that is being harvested as we speak. All of these tower gardens that we have in the field do not use new battery packs. We upcycle those lithium packs out of the school laptops.
So when you say upcycle, you're able to improve their performance again?
The term upcycle means finding a new use for a dated product. Okay. So it's not recycling. You're not destroying it and remaking it.
Right.
You're upcycling it. So you're using it in a new application. And by harvesting the good cells out of a 10-cell battery pack, and we do exercise the battery cells to standardize their capacity. So we do validate the quality. We are able to decide, okay, do we put 3 cells in this tower garden or 4 cells to give us the capacity we need? So that's how the upcycling works, and we're able to use the waste product.
Okay, I understand. Mm-hmm. You know, so these upcycled batteries, then you're able to apply it. Is there any way that you know of that you can actually take a battery and, I don't know what's the best term to use, re-energize it to make it back up to its full potential as before? Is that not possible?
No, it's possible. We've done some of that, especially with the automotive batteries, the lead acid and the hybrid electric vehicle battery packs. It's called battery regeneration.
Okay.
So batteries that were apparently dead or flat or couldn't start your car or couldn't run your hybrid, we're able to bring it back and rebuild a new pack or reinstall a new battery. We've gotten up to 18 months life again on the regular starter batteries, lead acid batteries.
Right.
Yeah.
All right, quite interesting. Okay, and so it's 10:30, and mm-hmm. I need to jump into a quick commercial break. But when we get back, we're going to continue this discussion.
All right.
Are you tired of the same old boring drive home from work? Look no further. Get ready for the ultimate after-work rush with Freedom 106.5 FM's The Overdrive with Davey. Mondays to Fridays from 3 p.m. to 6 p.m. Let Davey take you on a thrilling ride of non-stop entertainment and education. He covers the topics of the day, delves into the latest food and lifestyle trends, and brings dynamic guests from exciting professions to share their professional stories and experiences. Take advantage of this energizing and engaging experience. Tune in to Freedom 106.5 FM. Mondays to Fridays, 3 p.m. to 6 p.m. for The Overdrive. Overdrive with Davey. The ultimate way to end your day with a bang. Every weekday morning, Tusca Martinez brings you the stories that matter to you. On The Human Impact, tackling the issues of the day, exploring health and wellness that hits home, diving into powerful features, bold opinions, and a book club that keeps you thinking. It's thoughtful, it's fearless, and it's yours. Monday to Friday, 9 a.m. to 12 noon on Freedom 106.5 FM.
Speak your mind, Trinidad and Tobago, and let's make it count. The Human Impact, only on Freedom 106.5 FM.
Go big, go digital, go everywhere with the Big Board Company. With 18 high-impact digital billboard locations across the country, the Big Board Company puts your brand where it belongs, front and center. With state-of-the-art LED screens in the most high-traffic areas across the country, you are guaranteed to be seen. Get flexible scheduling, real-time updates, and the most eye-catching and dynamic visuals. With free artwork from local businesses to national brands, we bring reach and visibility like nobody else does. 18 locations, endless possibilities. Advertise with the Big Board Company and get that big board impact. Call 368-3754 for more information. We are proud. We are resilient. We are Trinidad and Tobago. Happy independence from all of us at the TBC Network and Guardian Media. We deserve to celebrate.
Join the TBC Network, Slam 100.5 FM, 95 The Ultimate One, 5 CT 105 FM, Sangeet 106.1 FM, Freedom 106.5 FM, and Sky 99.5 FM for Independence to Republic. 1 month to celebrate our achievements, our diversity, and evolution. The TBC Network will take you on the journey of a developing nation with captivating social media stories, radio podcasts, fun segments on the air, online challenges, and lots of trivia. Happy Independence, Trinidad and Tobago from all of us at the TBC Network and Guardian Media.
Independence to Republic moment is brought to you by IBIS, a tradition of excellence.
The Spellbound Caravan is coming to you featuring The Hive of Five, Saturday, September 6th at Gulf City Mall, 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. Get ready to experience our thrilling interactive zone where kids and adults explore the UN Sustainable Development Goals in a fun and creative way. Test your knowledge and get the chance to win prizes and giveaways from our amazing sponsors, photo ops with the Spellbound hosts, and so much more. The Spellbound Caravan is brought to you by the Ministry of Planning, Economic Affairs and Development, Chris Vital Supplies, Optometrist City, Mellow Chefs Quality Fries, Garden Foods, and Happy Land.
Now we return to Agribusiness Innovations with Mr. Jody White.
So, Ansel, I want to know, NGOs and other organizations who see potential in working with you in one way or the other, what are some of the ways that people could get involved?
Well, to date, one of the organizations that we work with is the National Center for Persons with Disabilities. That's down in San Fernando near the General Hospital, where young people are trained to support themselves. And the UNDP sponsored a number of the towers. And what has been taking place is we've been developing what we call civic leadership, where schools like students from Naprima College, which is just about a mile away, actually go, their students go down because they have experience with the Tower Gardens and assist these young people. What we call, the acronym is PYDs, persons with disabilities, to learn to use the towers and learn to actually be, you know, self-sufficient in some way or some fashion, even on entrepreneurship. In terms of the NGO, I can mention the IDEAS Foundation NGO. One of the directors founding is Ms. Nadia Rodda. You may be familiar with the Every Bottle Back concept. They were involved in that. They represent the more, let's call it the more community action arm to link to communities. More recently, I've been in contact with Cashew Gardens, their new launch in Central Trinidad, towards engaging with the public and the needy communities towards building a better future. The NGOs are particularly interested because we meet all the what we call the UN SDGs, the Sustainable Development Goals. Of course, food security is one of the big ones. Energy security is another one. Youth education, social activity, healthy living, urban living. There are a number of them, probably a good handful that we meet. So we are getting support, and what's been very valuable is that in the corporate sector, they have something now called the Environmental Social Governance Policies, which was part of the old CSR policy system, where what we're doing is supported. And via the Ministry of Education's program called Adopt a School, where 150% of any investment in the school comes back as a tax break to the corporate sector, we are engaging so that we get more corporate involvement. So it's a public-private partnership that we are creating, where in many cases, you'd find that, especially in a community environment, no funds are called for at the community level. It's sponsored via the corporate level, and the support is there. So this is the kind of scaling we're doing, not just pure retail, not just pure commercial. This is why when we try to support entities, even like, for instance, the St. Mary's Home in Tacarigua, we make sure that there is the support level in that particular environment for their particular needs. And we do. What will happen next week as we launch, our young technicians and trainees from the MIC Institute will go out into the field and start doing checkups on wherever these towers are. In usually preliminary for the schools, we do that in advance. In terms of government support, and leveraging. We're in contact, as I said, with the Ministry of Education and the Ministry of MTS, and both are on board. And hopefully within a couple of weeks, I'll be having meetings with our Town and Country Division, the Director of Town and Country, because one of the things we have to discuss when we talk about agricultural zoning or agricultural homestead zoning for the farmers, solar infrastructure needs to be now considered as part of that. And I think what has been going on historically is that hasn't been an element within the Town and Country zoning system. So that's another discussion that we have to have in terms of seeking support from our Ministry of Planning and Development.
And so somebody wants to know what the towers look like. Is there a website or something they could go to, or can you describe what the system looks like?
Well, the easiest way is via the website. that's on the MIC's website. So that'll be mic.co.tt/greentech. GRENNTECH. That's mic.co.tt/greentech. So you'll get an idea of not only the features, but pictures of it in use, as well as the different sizes that are available to suit your need. And of course, there's a link there, called their marketing department. A guy called John Davidson is there to do any quotations or any arrangements for supplies.
So I've heard that you've had these installations in different organizations, schools. Have you then had any of these done for private homes?
We've done a few, but we actually, that has all been by word of mouth, because these are not advertised or visible in our store yet. The reason being twofold. One, of course, manufacturing at scale, the high levels of stock you need to distribute in multiple stores. And secondarily, the product was under improvement in the schools to make sure if it could withstand a school environment, then we can be sure of its reliability for the public before we went to full retail. So we're at that point now where we're scaling. And so what we hope to do is engage with entities. I believe we're having conversations with Greenage Farms, maybe familiar with them, as one of the potential retailers, to make the product available in an environment where they will get supported ancillary items like the net pots and the fertilizers and so on site.
So based on this, what type of person would you say is the right person to go out and buy a system like this for their home?
I would estimate, especially for persons who are space constrained, you're living in an area where you don't have much land, so you don't have the opportunity for a kitchen garden. They would represent the ideal target demographic for us for the tower, because it's only taking up one square yard and doesn't require any infrastructure. So you can set it up within an hour at home, and it's portable. In terms of persons who want to perhaps run a small business, they have a small hydroponic setup. There's a gentleman nearby where I am called running a business, Serenity Gardens, with hydroponics here in Chaguanas East. We're looking at possibly discussing him having some of these here to enjoy the benefits of them, because he has a really compact installation as well. So those are the opportunities. In terms of large farmers, we're not targeting them at this time. Those who have access to large acreage and so on already have the infrastructure to do farming. This product is really targeted at those in the more urban or suburban environments or small areas where you have just a lot of land here and there, but you need to have the opportunity to grow your own crops or even run a small business with fresh produce.
Yeah, I think so. You know, I have a system home that I built. It's not perfect, but it works. And it's one of those vertical towers with a couple towers interlinked into one. And there is a certain level of joy that you get in growing your own food, as many people would know. And I want to say that working on these hydroponic systems, the back-breaking soil work out of it. Because when I have to work on crops in the soil, bending over constantly, it gets tiring. And especially for older people, I can see where these towers can actually even be put on a little bit of a stand. So things are maybe knee-height and up, which makes it a lot easier for people to do their own home garden and grow a few things for themselves. So I think that that's good.
We even have a person who is about 73 years old with a back problem using the tower gardens. So it does work for them.
And, you know, these systems as well, I mean, if it is something that you can actually apply off the grid, or some people who could have apartments, maybe you have a little balcony, you could roll it out on the balcony during the day, bring it in later on if you have to. So I see a lot of potential for these things, definitely, at home. Because there are a lot of people, I don't know if you ever heard a lot of people say that nothing is grown by them in the soil. Maybe the backyard soil isn't as fertile, and they don't want to actually put in a lot of the work to actually rehabilitate it. So I actually see a lot of these things becoming very, very useful. So, Ansel, you've come this far. I believe you've won some awards for this as well, right?
Yeah, over the last few years, we got recognized by the United Nations Development Program, a couple of Energy Chamber Awards for Renewable Energy and Innovation, the Best Social Impact Award in 2024 from the Energy Chamber as well, because, you know, the impact in schools. And, of course, the World Intellectual Property Award that was associated via the Snail Defense System. And of significance, however, we are now recognized by the United Kingdom's Trade Program. And in 2024, the United States Department of State recognized us for climate adaptive agriculture in the Eastern Caribbean. So we got some nice accreditation that gives us the credibility to engage with the corporate sector and engage with, you know, potential global exports downstream.
Have you had any interest from organizations then? Because I know this was one of the reasons you got into it in the first place, to deploy these systems in countries that are at risk of hurricanes and other similar weather events?
Well, thus far, we have interest from entities in Barbados and Jamaica. Those are two of the English-speaking countries that are interested. We have some interest as well from St. Martin, but the challenge is, of course, shipping within the Caribbean is a little bit of a challenge.
Expensive, eh?
Indeed. And it's one of the hurdles we have to overcome. Now, what we've been doing with the latest towers is we are having them come totally knocked down. So they're like a giant Lego set.
Right.
So they're packaged in a box that's about 2 feet by 2 feet by 1 foot. So it can be shipped easily. And when it arrives, there's a video online so you can assemble it at your home. Once you're 10 years and over, I think you can do it. Assemble it. And because it's all child safe stuff, voltages and so on, anyone can do it without any special tools or anything like that. So that's the model we're going with, so that it's more available to the Caribbean communities that we're trying to focus on right now. And what we hope to achieve is to engage with their ministries of education, because, you know, we have CSEC and CAPE in the Caribbean. So we're looking at integrating it into the curricula, develop school textbooks going forward and handbooks, so that the teaching can take place in a more structured manner in the schools. So hopefully, now that we're also going into the UWI, that's the Faculties of Engineering, Agriculture, and Science and Technology in different capacities, what we have developed is a platform so that from primary through secondary and tertiary, a singular platform that serves the needs at every level, so that when these young people graduate, in whatever capacity they are, the average person graduating in Trinidad and Tobago or the Caribbean is well equipped to actually have a tower garden at their home, and they're familiar with it.
Have you ever had the opportunity to present this to any of the ministers of agriculture in Trinidad, present or past?
The answer to that is no, but there is an opportunity. Dr. Dowlath recently, he's the current Minister of Education, is hoping to engage with Minister Ratiram, who happens to be involved in innovation and leadership in his past history. So there's that opportunity, but we look forward to having that conversation, because now that it's going commercial in this manner to the average person, as well as aligning with our whole education system in agriculture, as well as engineering and science, there's every opportunity to leverage that so that our young people have a more secure food security basis going forward without the overheads of being a farmer or needing land.
Now, I know you are somebody that always innovates and you're continuously developing. where do you see the next stage of development coming out? I continuously see electronics with like Wi-Fi built in to do random things. Do you have any plans to possibly look into that in the future?
The immediate plans, as we speak, actually, I just placed a design in for what we call Bluetooth capable interfacing. So the concept will be an app that will be on your average mobile device, your phone, whatnot, where you interface like that with the tower. Now, the advantage being twofold. One, the real-time data meaning sensor data, temperature, humidity, what have you, all the environmental data that the tower samples, can also now go to the phone directly. And then that can link with the artificial intelligence application. This is one for Trinidad and Tobago called letzfarm.com, letzfarm.com, that was produced 1 year ago.
Right.
This is specifically for our country. And so it knows the environment as well as the plant and soil types. If we have a situation where you're the average person, you never farmed before, but let's say the crops on your tower are not looking as happy as you'd like them to be, you take a photograph with your phone, it goes directly to the artificial intelligence, which has the data on the tower, the nutrients, the temperature, the light level, the rainfall, whatnot. It knows what the tower is. It knows the GPS of where the tower is. So it can tell you directly, in your case, at your home, in your backyard, the way you have that tower set up, this is what you need to do to sort out any little issue you may have. So the level of artificial intelligence becomes very precise. It's not general. It's talking about you and your problem at your premises. So this is what we're creating, hopefully by mid-year in 2026, to start rolling out into schools.
That app you're talking about, was that an app created by government or is that a private individual?
That took place under the auspices of the Future of Innovation program run by the Ministry of Planning through Kariri for a couple of years now. I think the last cycle was last year.
Right.
The entity that got the grant to create the app was the Carbon Zero Initiative of Trinidad Tobago, CZITT.com. Based in Point Lisa. So that made it a custom agricultural application for Trinidad and Tobago. So we're aligning all our technologies that are developed for our country, making them a holistic solution. So basically the plants will actually be benefiting directly from that technology through your mobile phone with the system we're creating now.
You know, so many things coming on stream. I really hope that is not something that people are developing technologies and it gets lost, because quite often that happens. I mean, during COVID, we saw the push for technology and then all of a sudden the push kind of fizzled out. So I'll be happy to know that these things are actually getting momentum and then being implemented and used. Crossing my fingers on that, because that's the only way we're really going to see progress.
Indeed. Well, we're going to test it and validate it, and we have what we call a very, very useful platform among all the schools, and the children are always very interested. Young people, once you get them involved in technology-related activities, especially via their phone and their apps and so on, if they could break it, they will break it. So it's a nice test bed.
And I was curious, the development of this thing, right? Is it solely you, or do you have business partners or a team that works with you?
I have a network. There's something called the Caribbean Climate Innovation Center, headquarters in Jamaica. So while I do, let's call it the focus work in Trinidad and Tobago, I have colleagues in the islands, in the similar fields, who I interact with. There's every potential when we're talking about something called the let's call it the long-range networking that's needed for the rural environment. Let's say you're out somewhere and the tower garden is out of range of your phone's, your phone is out of range of the B-mobile or the digital communications. There's something called long-range internet, and they're using that in Jamaica right now. So I've had conversations with Cable and Wireless in Jamaica to look at deploying that system here. So they're, let's call it individual partners within the Caribbean space who I network with to leverage technology as and when we need it. So we don't have the overheads of having a large staff. Another one that I work with in terms of solar, there's an entity called Nuance Solar, N-U-A-N-C-E, run by Lauren Peters, Trinidad and Tobago. So in terms of getting supplies and getting support from the purely solar element, that is available. So via networking and via LinkedIn, of course, we achieve results without the overheads.
That's pretty innovative. All right, so we cannot come in towards the end of our program today. Are there any closing remarks that you want to say to our listeners? And again, if you can, let our listeners know the website, the social media handles that they can use to continue to see some of the work that you're doing and hopefully even in the future, support and purchase.
Okay, well, let me try to summarize some of all this information we've talked about. Okay, to begin with, the where can you find it, or where can you get it, or where can you purchase it? That will be at the MIC Institute of Technology. That's mic.co.tt/greentech. Their landline is 663-4642. You can speak to the operator and ask for the marketing department. John Davidson is the person you want to speak with directly. And they can organize whatever supplies you need and whatever units you may want. What the tower gardens are called is called Solar Ponics. That ends with P-O-N-I-X. You can Google it online. And at the mic.co.tt/greentech site, you can see all the pictures and all the activities. On YouTube, there are videos for Solar Ponics under the NGC banner, Small Steps to Change. So you can actually see it in use. What it represents, it's a democratization of food security for everyone, being fully solar powered and not needing any plumbing infrastructure. So you can place it wherever you like, whenever you like. Move it if a storm is coming. The weight of it is under 30 kilograms. So I can lift it up with no difficulty. We just pump out the water and into a bucket and we move it. It can be moved through doorways or elevators with crops on board, occupying just one square yard. And it's suitable for rural environments, urban environments, schoolyards. It defends against the giant African snail without pesticides. And it represents healthy food security for everyone using technology, even via your phone app soon, with convenience. And now that it's integrated in our school sector all the way up to the UWI, you'll find that your young ones, if you have kids, will be exposed to it in the schools. So oftentimes what is starting to happen is our parents are asking how to get it. And very soon they will be able to get it at home as well. So we have to thank all the sponsors that have been involved to date in the energy sector, the support from NAPRIMA College, the support from the Ministry of Education, and now MTEST. They've all had parts to play. And now we've gone global through the Intellectual Property Organization and the United States Department and the United Kingdom. Trinidad is bringing food security technology to the world very shortly as an export product.
That's great. All right, Trinidad and Tobago, Agribusiness Innovation. Today, Ansel Bagwandeen was our guest. Next week, Thursday, of course, we are back with another edition. Brand new guests, so stay tuned. Tosca, this is the end for me. It's back over to you.
The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.